All right. It is now my pleasure to introduce tonight's speaker with 30 years of sobriety, Danette.
I'm being adjusted. I'm Danette. I'm an alcoholic. Hey, everybody. Good to be here. Sobriety is one of the most important things I do, and you know, thank you for being here to help me work my program. I guess I'm a little nervous. I like sitting, you know, on the floor with everybody in a circle and talking, and that's pretty comfortable for me. And when I get up here, I think I'm supposed to know more than I do. And I had a wonderful sponsor that said, what you know is enough. And that has helped me a lot, because I have all these expectations of, you know, I don't know, being more. I like to say, as I've heard in the years I've been coming around, that the things I say from this podium are my experience and my opinion. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous is in our literature, and I'm very thankful for that. That is where I found the solution to a life that was no longer working for me. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was 27. And I was trying to figure out how to drink and not get in trouble, and how to drink and make it work like it used to. When I started drinking, alcohol was a magic elixir. It took me from being who I didn't want to be, where I wasn't enough, and just rocketed me into a fourth dimension. I absolutely loved the effect that alcohol had on me. And from the first time I drank, I made the connection that alcohol did something for me that I needed done. It allowed me to fit into my life more comfortably. It fixed a sense of not belonging, of being afraid. It took all of that and allowed me to just move into my life and feel like I had this real presence, you know, and I felt it, and I'd fuck you if you don't like me, and you know, I like being in that spot, you know. I like feeling like I got it by the tail, you know. And when I drank, that was my experience. And if it didn't come off the way I wanted, it didn't matter, because you didn't count. Alcohol allowed me that freedom, that sense that I was in charge. And I drank not for a long time, really. But what happened for me when I drank was that I would go to any lengths to get the next drink. Whatever it took, wherever I was going. I did a lot of crazy stuff drinking. And, you know, some of that, an example, right? I'm in Colorado Springs. I'm going to go see my friend in another town there in Windsor, Colorado. And I start out on this 2.5-hour drive, and I pick up a hitchhiker, because nobody loves you more than a hitchhiker on a snowy day. And, you know, I remember bits and pieces. There was this, you know, why don't you let me drive? And I'm like, oh, no one drives my car but me. And he's like, well, how about some coffee? And I'm like, I don't drink coffee. And he's like, there's a truck stop. Why don't we get some hot chocolate? And I'm like, well, that sounds okay, you know. So we pull in there and sit in this booth, and I've got my hot chocolate, and I'm sitting there, and suddenly I realize my hitchhiker's left me, and I'm in tears, you know. I'm like, God, my hitchhiker left me, and I'm drunk. I don't belong with somebody who didn't want to die with me that day, you know. And I didn't die. Surprise. And I made it to Windsor, and I remember that experience of going to the mini mart. I was going to see my friend, and I needed directions, this little town. So I go to the mini mart, and I'm walking up the steps. It actually was like some old house being converted. And I'm like this, that not everyone knows what a payphone is, but that's what we had back then. And I got my arm up here on the payphone, and I'm trying to hit the numbers. you know, to call my friend. And what I remember is the look of the people behind the counter as they saw me over there trying to get my directions. And I got that look many times throughout my drinking. That disgust, that like, really? But, you know, it was just the look. And when you're drinking, they can go look all they want, you know. You can do what you do. You're going to have a good time doing it. I moved to Visalia in, 84, I guess. And I started looking for how to fit in. And the way I fit in when I come to a new place is I look for the bar, the one I'm going to connect up at, you know, and where I like to go, where I like to have fun, how I'm going to meet people. And, you know, all the insanity that takes place there is very attractive to me. There's a lot of fun to be had. And I had a lot of fun with my drinking for a good long time. Well, 10 years. So, you know, I go and I'm trying to fit in, I'm trying to connect, and they had started doing this thing called lip sync back then. And so I decide, after I arrive at the bar at 6 and drink until they start the thing up at 9:30, I could probably do that. I'm like, do you have the words? How does this work? I'm in, you know. And I can't remember if they dragged me off the floor, if I finally walked off the floor, because I didn't know what I was doing up there, but I thought I was going to have me some fun. I got in a lot of trouble at work. I lost jobs. Drinking, it was important to me to have a job. It meant I was in charge. It meant I had a place to live. And then I wasn't going to have to depend on you, because you were not trustworthy and you did not come through. So I was going to be able to take care of myself. Thank you very much. And I was just fierce about that. I would show up to work in the saddest of conditions, because it meant that I was going to be able to take care of myself. I don't know. I had a work ethic. I don't know where it came from. And I can remember sitting there. I had office jobs most of the time, and I transferred up here from Los Angeles with my job. And I can remember sitting there in my little cubicle, you know, and I'm just kind of rocking and trying to comfort myself and maybe humming a little bit, you know, because I'm so empty inside, you know, and I've been up till dark 30 that morning, and then I only had a couple drinks before I got to my desk, and life's pretty hard under those conditions, you know, and I just can't imagine how I'd feel about me in a cubicle next to me if I was sober, humming and trying to comfort myself. And I remember our lead person there going, oh, there's a little songbird loose in the office this morning. Oh, fuck you, you know. And so what happened for me between a couple times going to jail, you know, the first time I rear-ended somebody in Tulare getting on the freeway, and I was with warrants out for my arrest. And then the other time I'd been down in Bakersfield drinking with a friend, you know, and when you've been drinking for a couple hours and you need to get home so you can go to work tomorrow, I just pulled right on the on-ramp and into the fast lane, and pretty soon those lights were going behind me, and I pulled over to the side of the road and got the field sobriety test, which they're looking at me, and I think where I really messed up was, you know, they got the little flashlight up there, and I'm like, are you looking for my contacts? Because I got them in, you know, I'm vision requirement. And yeah, they said, you know, we're just not sure, so we're going to, you know, take you in, and we'll park your car down here in the little shopping center, but we got to take you in. And boy, they were pissed when I blew whatever it was I did, because they didn't have them in the cars then. So they hauled me in for it. And I spent the night there in jail, and I called my roommate. I'm like, you've got to call in sick for me. They can't know I'm here, you know. And just all that, trying to make it look like I'm doing the deal and trying to be okay and keeping up an appearance the best I can. and wanting to be a good employee, wanting to be a good daughter, wanting to be a good friend, but I can't, because what I need is to drink. And when I start drinking, I don't have two. I don't have three. I drink until I wonder how I got home and if this is home and, you know, where's my car? And then I say, man, that's horrible. I'm going to manage what I do when I drink. So I don't want to quit drinking. Drinking's my solution. Drinking's my answer. Drinking is how I walk through the challenges that life throws at me, throws at everybody. But how are you going to cope with that stuff? You know? And the way I do it is I find this substance that sets me free. And then as I continue to drink, and that phenomenon of craving, and that drinking more than I should, and not doing what I plan to do, takes over my life, I say, you know, I gotta quit this stuff. But the next day, what I really need is another drink, because it fixes me. And I need fixing. So, you know, what happened was I started getting less and less reward from drinking and more consequences, you know. The consequences, I'm about to lose my job. I get disciplinary action. I get time off without pay. Well, I know what to do with time off. You know, I go up to the lake with a nice chest and tie up to a buoy up there on the little, and meet people. You know, have a party. I'm not going to be punished. I'm going to have fun. And I love to have fun today. But it looks different. And it doesn't cost me what it used to. Mental, physical, spiritual demoralization. That's where alcohol took me. I got in a lot of trouble at work. I was on the carpet all the time. I wanted to be a good employee. I couldn't. And one day my boss calls me in after 2 years of being less than satisfactory and getting written up and getting demoted and getting disciplinary action. And she said, you know, I'd like to help you, but I don't know what's wrong. I don't know what's wrong with you. You seem like an intelligent person, but here's what you did yesterday. I don't know how to help you. I was tired. I was tired of staying up all night, trying to drag my butt into work. I was tired of alcohol taking from me what I valued in my life. And I told her that sometimes I drank too much. I mean, what do you do between the rock and the hard place, you know? So she called HR and found out what was possible for me, and they sent me away to an inpatient program. And that was Frank and Shirlene's little program down there called Pine. And I did not like it. I did not think this was what I had in mind. There was no basket weaving. There was no pottery. There was no room service. There was just the residents doing what it took to keep that place running. And getting up at 0:30 to cook a bunch of ungrateful folks breakfast. You know, it was, and that's not how I live my life with people telling me what to do. That is not the way I live my life. But I had this job on the line, and I was willing to have a break from it and get paid. And I had been to Alcoholics Anonymous once before because I knew I drank too much, and I told some people I would check it out. And so I had to show up. I thought for sure it was a cult with their own big book and all that. Oh, I was just couldn't get out of the door fast enough. And at Pine, they took us to meetings, as I'm sure some of us in this room have experienced. And I told them that I was not in the mood to go to a meeting, and if they made me go, I was going to make them look bad. I thought I was so powerful. Yep. Everybody thought poorly of Pine after I showed up at that meeting. So what happened was that I had this moment of grace, this spiritual crack, this chink in my armor. I was covered in armor. It served me well. It allowed me to manage my life, to not get beat up, to take care of myself. And what happened was at a lake meeting up at Kaweah. They used to have one at the second boat ramp. And I realized on that starlit night that I wanted more for my life. I wanted more than drinking and pretending. I wanted more than trying to look like I was doing okay. I wanted more than that empty sense of what can I do to fill myself up? What? I wanted more. And from there, the smallest of beginnings allowed me to stay. And I didn't jump into action and go, all right then. I thought I did. I was looking for the social scene. I was going to the dances. I was having a good time. I was looking for him. If I could just find the right him, you know, if there were, then I would have the love I needed in my life, and I wouldn't drink this way. I wouldn't have these problems. I'd be content. I'd be fulfilled. And that's what I thought was the solution to this unhappiness within me. So I went to meetings, I went to the social things, and I kept an eye open for him. And yeah, I found Mr. Right Now. That's what I found. Yeah. And it was fun until it wasn't. And then it was so painful, I felt like I was going to die. And I don't know how I didn't drink through that. I had a sponsor. She listened to me a lot, and I had a lot to say. I was in a lot of pain. And it took me, you know, going through that, doing the insane stuff and not drinking. And I did a lot of crazy stuff not drinking because I didn't have a solution for life. I'm still trying to make my life work. I'm still trying to be okay. I'm still trying to look like I got it together. And I'm not drinking. And that is a hard place to be for me. So what happened was I kind of sort of got a sponsor, and then I kind of sort of got another one. And I'm going to 5 different 12-step groups. I have a lot of issues, you know. I got problems. I'm not working the steps in any of them. You know, I haven't quite figured out that that's the solution offered here. I'm just going. And I'm going to Debtors Anonymous. And I'm going to Codependents Anonymous. And I'm going to Love Addicts Anonymous because he's not showing up. And I'm going to Cocaine Anonymous and Adult Children of Alcoholics. And I'm like spinning like a top. I'm like, where, you know, if I do enough stuff, I'm going to get enough and I'm going to feel, you know, how I need to. And that's my approach. So I was about 5 years sober and I got desperate. That's what happened to me. I was batshit crazy. Hadn't had a drink. Hadn't had a solution that really fit. And I called up a woman I'd met in another of these 12-step programs that I was darting about to. And I asked her if she'd sponsor me in this 12-step program that I'd met her at. And she said to me, how's your, you know, how have your steps been in Alcoholics Anonymous? How's your AA program? And I said, AA has saved my life. I have been sober 5 years. I'm waiting for the 5 years, right? And I said, where I need help is with my relationships. And she said, you know, I believe if you work a thorough set of steps in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, it will affect all areas of your life. And I said, you know, I am so thankful for AA. I haven't drank for 5 years. But where I really need help is with my relationships. Silence. She said, Danette, I believe if you work a thorough set of steps in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, it will affect all areas of your life. And I heard it. I've been coming around here for a while. I hadn't heard that. It began a journey for me through the steps with this wonderful sponsor. I met her over in Bishop. She lived in Montana. I met with her for an hour every week on the telephone. And we worked through the big book. And when there were actions described there, we took them. And she sent me homework and I mailed it back. And I did the work. And it was astonishing to me that at 5 years sober, I became convinced to my innermost self that I was alcoholic. And I realized what a gift this program is. I realized that I was hopeless and helpless, that I was pretty much insane, and that there was a power greater than myself that was going to restore me to sanity. The transformation that is described in the book took place for me as a result of the work I did. I didn't like it. It wasn't easy. I hid my fourth step when I started writing it. Oh, God, nobody know this stuff, you know. And I live alone. I'm hiding it. Hid it from myself. Couldn't find it for about 3 weeks. My sponsor said, you're going to have to start over. Oh, fuck. So I started praying that I would find it because I didn't want to rehash everything that I'd already dredged up again, you know. And I didn't want to write it again, and I didn't want to, you know, none of it again. So I found it, and she and I went through it. And then we went on to 6 and 7, and I don't think that I really was at a point in my sobriety where I understood much about humility. You know, I was still ready to run the show. I was still pretty sure that I needed to make sure everyone else was doing it right. And we got on to 8 and 9. And that was tough stuff. That was tough stuff for me. I was a thief, you know. It was, you know, I grew up supporting myself with this five-finger discount business that allowed me to wear the clothes I wanted to wear and drink the right stuff that I wanted to drink. I didn't want to drink the crap. I wanted, you know, I wanted the good stuff, and so I'd take it and not pay. And my sponsor had me do some calculations. Well, how much do you think you stole? Can you make an estimate? You know, where did those people live? What did you take? And I came up with some amounts, and I remember driving down to Bakersfield to the May Company down there. And I called ahead and made an appointment with their security or recovery loss, I think they called it, loss recovery, I don't know. So when I was drinking, so it's not funny, but, you know, I take what I want if I can get my hands on it. And so I went to the hardware store and I stole a wire cutter kind of thing. And then I went to the May Company and stole this coat that was chained up because I liked it. It was pretty. And so I went down there and I owed him upwards of, I don't know, $1,200 from years gone by. And if I couldn't pay, I needed to make arrangements to pay. Because those kind of things hanging over me, those things I hadn't cleared out of my wreckage, could cause me to get drunk. And I don't want to drink. I've got such a better life not drinking. I'm starting to see some of the rewards of not drinking, like you know, waking up where I know where I am, and I'm no longer, you know, on the less than satisfactory list at work. And my life's kind of coming together, and I'm starting to make some friends in the groups that I'm going to. I still have the same home group today. When I was in Pine, they took us to this women's meeting, and oh, us girls hated it. And we were terrible. We passed notes and giggled, and like if we could get the driver to stop and buy us candy on the way, that was the best. And, you know, I don't think I realized that, you know, I didn't have respect for nothing. I didn't have it for myself. I certainly didn't have it for those old hags sitting around. Yeah, well, that was my experience. You know, I was young, and I just figured they were just old and couldn't keep it going. But then on the other hand, I wanted something different, you know. And like I said, it took me 5 years before I got to the steps, so I didn't have any tools that allowed me to take in what was being offered in those rooms. I think one of the biggest changes that took place for me as a result of making amends was the relationships with my family. Because for the first time, instead of trying to cover it up or pretend like it wasn't so bad or say I'm sorry one more time, I had a sponsor directing me to see where I had caused harm and what wrongs I had done. Probably the biggest relationship that changed was with my mom, because I didn't have a good relationship with her. I felt like she hadn't given me the tools I needed to live well. I blamed her for a lot of the crap in my life. And I came to see as I worked through this amends and did the writing around it that I was a heck of a lot like her. And I really saw for the first time that she was doing the best she could. Doesn't mean it was enough, doesn't mean it was right. The thing that happened was I got to be free. I didn't do these amends so that they could finally realize what a shit I'd been. I did these amends and I got a freedom that I don't believe I could have gotten in any other way, because I acknowledged and owned my part in those exchanges, and I didn't carry it anymore. I didn't carry that resentment. Being free of the resentments is so worth doing the work of the ninth step. Yeah, I had some glasses here. There's a part in the book that I would like to share with you because it's meant a lot to me. It's on page 42. It says, then they outlined the spiritual answer and program of action which 100 of them had followed successfully. Though I had been only a nominal churchman, their proposals were not, intellectually, hard to swallow. But the program of action, though entirely sensible, was pretty drastic. It meant that I would have to throw several lifelong conceptions out the window. That was not easy. But the moment I made up my mind to go through with the process, I had a curious feeling that my alcoholic condition was relieved, as in fact it proved to be. Quite as important was the discovery that spiritual principles would solve all my problems. When I got here, I thought spiritual was religious, and I wasn't going to have it. I wasn't going to have it from you, and I wasn't going to have it from the church, and I wasn't going to have it. And someone told me, someone that I was willing to listen to, they said, Danette, you are so full of what you know about God, you have no room for new understanding. And I didn't. And I began to try to, as you said, you're like a cup that's full to the brim. Try to empty some of that out so you can get some new information. That was very helpful to me. I had Heather as a sponsor for about 5 years. And she kept telling me, Danette, you need an in-town sponsor. You need somebody that can see you. You need somebody that you're seeing at meetings. And I was stuck. And what happened was that a lady moved to town, and she had contacted our central office. And if anyone does a move across country, this is an excellent suggestion. Contact the central office where you're moving to and ask for the name of someone that will be a friend or a contact, or so you're not moving cold to a new area. And so Patty got my information, and we started exchanging emails, and we started talking about our program and our sobriety and what we valued and how we worked the steps. And it was just crazy to have this friend. Email was kind of new back then, and so it was like that kind of you got mail thing, and I'm like, oh, my friend, you know. And so I'm having this big exchange with her, and she's getting ready to move, and it was like, you know, 2 months out. So she moves up here, and I'm so excited to meet her because, you know, we've just developed this exchange and this rapport and friendship. And so I'm going to meet her at the meeting that I go to at a home group. And I walk in to the home group, and I see this stranger sitting there. And I'm like, holy cow, that's got to be her. And she is skinny and cute. And obviously to me, she's got a lot more money than I do. And she's composed and she's sophisticated. And I'm like, I fucking hate her. You know? You know, and if I had not had that contact with her, I would have been closed off. I would have had all this stuff in my head that told me who she was, and I would have not been open to making a connection with her. And I think God worked that out beautifully because I loved her. I've been talking to her, but my eyeballs are telling me I don't, you know. And she and I begin a journey through the steps. I have found it useful to go through the steps a number of times. You know, I stay around here. I continue to need these tools, and different people see it differently. And she gave me the gift of, I felt like she really got me. She really saw my stuff, you know. And I guess that's the advantage of having somebody that you're looking at when you're doing this work instead of, you know, on the telephone. And she sponsored me for a good number of years until she moved. And I absolutely loved the consistency and the structure that my sponsors have offered to me. That once a week meeting, that going through the work, that here's your assignment, okay, let's go over it. Because the literature is where the transformation takes place. It's not in the camaraderie, which is valuable, not in the fellowship, it's important, but it's in applying the steps and knowing what they are, that the change that turns me into someone that doesn't need to drink. Because when I got here, I needed to drink. It fixed me. So when Patty moved, you know, I was moving to the coast. She moved to the coast. I'm moving to the coast. I'm following the sponsor. She has my answer, right? She's directing me to a higher power. But I feel like I have found someone who gets me. I want to let that go. So I get my husband roped in, and I'm like, honey, let's look for a place at the coast. Wouldn't that be nice, you know? And as unpractical as it is, both from the aspect of cost, and our jobs happen to be here. So, well, that kind of takes me to a little diversion. You know, I met my my husband at an AA potluck. And sometimes those relationships work out well. And it talks about it in our literature when we're not meeting boy meets girl on AA campus. That's, you know, I'm looking for something to get me out of myself. And like I told you, I was already looking for him. And when I find him, it takes all that energy that might go towards my steps and towards that spiritual solution, and I have a relationship. And that's much more exciting than opening a book. But I met Alan, and he had, 7-8 years sober, maybe more. And I had 6 or 7, you know. And I'd started praying that when I was ready, God would bring someone. Because I kept looking for the right guy, and I have a broke picker, you know. I am picking some doozies. And so, I feel like I'm jumping around a bit. But we met and we dated for about 2 years, and then he asked me to marry him. And that has been a journey too, and one that has been greatly enhanced by the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the biggest reason is we have a way to work through our differences. We have differences. We're different people. But instead of me being right and you being a shit, it's kind of like, okay, can I take a look at what I'm doing? And I have a sponsor that's an objective viewpoint and is willing to help me see my part. And sometimes I go to her before, in fact, it's been helpful to talk it over with someone else before I, you know, blow the cap, because a lot of times it's me, you know, me not getting my way, me wanting what I want. I'm grateful for the people that have given their time and shown me the steps they took to keep sober. I've always availed myself of a sponsor, because my thinking is a problem. It talks about in our program that the problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. And my thinking's askew, and I know it. And so having someone that I trust, that I can talk to, and knowing who to call when my head feels like it's about to pop because life isn't going my way and other people aren't behaving, and those are the things that would take me to drinking, because drinking fixed those things. So I'm very blessed to have a sponsor today that is available, that returns my calls or takes my calls if she's able to talk, and that is using the program herself to walk through life and do it with grace and dignity. Working through problems today, we have this automatic sprinkler system at our house. And my husband does the yard work, and so we're out there. We don't have a guy to program it. And we're out there, and I'm like, I'm sure I've set it right, and it's not coming on at the right time, and it's watering weird hours and all of this. And so we're going to put our heads together and fix it, because it's a problem. And I'm telling you, I get in there, and I'm reading this, and I think I understand it, and I just get so tense about being right about this sprinkler thing, you know. Alan's going, well, doesn't it say this? Oh, well, hell yes, it does, but what it means, you know, and I am still that person today, you know. I still have a better plan, another idea, another way to handle it, and I'm pretty sure that I have the right one. And we walk through that, and because I have learned a little bit in this program, I don't have to come undone. And that's a gift. Absolutely a gift. And when I come undone, I have friends and sponsors help put me back together. And I don't have to drink. I don't have to drink. When I was about a year sober, my brother was killed on a motorcycle. He hit a deer. And I came to meetings and I cried and I didn't know what to do. I just fell apart. And I didn't drink no matter what. He was sober in this program. He'd come live with me to get sober and go through Pine also. there's still a hole in my life from that loss. But it's not one that alcohol can fill. I hope that you've heard something this evening that makes you want to stay sober another day. It is a one day at a time program. I can't get my sobriety 5 days out. I can't get it 2 days out. I can't decide, you know, when I'm this far sober, then I'll be something. Life continues to happen. I continue to need this program and you people. Thanks for asking me to share tonight.